Welcome to the Divided Kingdom, heard on WWCR, Liberty Works Radio Network, Global Star, and KSTARTalkRadio.com. This is Lou Caverly.
And this is Elizabeth Tuppett Caverly.
It's September 9th, almost 20 years to the day after what may have been the beginning of God's judgment on America, the gargantuan destruction at Ground Zero, more than 3,000 innocent American lives lost. We now move to the year 2021 and breaking news of hope. From LifeSite News, huge crowds as Toronto police officers join Rally for Freedom against vaccine passports. This is by Jack Bingham, September 3rd, 2021. Toronto, Ontario. On Thursday, September 2nd, in a show of united noncompliance, hundreds of police officers and citizens held a rally in front of Toronto Police Service headquarters in downtown Toronto to protest against vaccine passports and mandates. Look at this crowd today. Chris Skye, one of the de facto leaders in Canada's opposition to dictatorial COVID measures, told the cheering crowd, "We have the people aligned with the police against the draconian government. And what do we call that, everybody?" Skye asked. "United noncompliance," the crowd replied. "I told you all that the police would eventually have to draw a line in the sand. The police would eventually have to honor their oath to our Constitution."
Yay for our friends across the border.
Yes, their oath to themselves, the oath to their families, the oath to their country. "And today is that day," stated Skye. "And when they stepped up to the plate for us, as you see, we stepped up to the plate for them," he continued. LifeSite News attended the rally and has exclusive photo and video coverage of the massive turnout of freedom-fighting police officers and citizens. One sign read, "No experimental vaccines." Another read, "Father God, we thank you for fighting our battles for us. Amen." In a display of faith, one of the rally members held a 5 to 6 foot tall crucifix above the crowd, and many others displayed similarly sized crosses as icons of faith and hope for all those in attendance. Talking about the government's continued plan to dismantle the rights of Canadians, which includes Premier Doug Ford's installation of vaccine passport system in Ontario, Skye outlined the timetable of events from his perspective, referencing public statements he has made. Said Skye, 18 months ago, the mere words vaccine passport made me a crazy conspiracy theorist. Now that it's here, even 6 weeks ago, when Doug Ford said, "We're not going to do a vaccine passport," I told you all that that's called pacification followed by predictive programming. Skye went on to tell the crowd that he predicted the call for a rushed election and that he sees the election as a tool to distract the public. Referencing the dictatorial COVID-19 measures implemented by Ontario Conservative Premier Doug Ford, Skye told the crowd that it does not matter whether it is a Liberal or Conservative government because these measures are being implemented by both sides. He said, "There is no political solution to this problem. They want us arguing about our favorite politician while they slip the vaccine passport in the back door." Currently in Canada, both the Federal Conservative Party leader, Erin O'Toole, and the Federal Liberal leader, Justin Trudeau, support the strict COVID-19 measures and mandates being implemented. Skye told the crowd that many businesses have started to publicly oppose these mandates, with business owners across the country vowing to refuse enforcing the passport measures forced on them. There are, quote, over 100,000 businesses, unquote, pledging support in British Columbia, and almost 100,000 in Ontario, he stated. Do you see where compliance leads you? Do you really need to comply any longer to see where it's going to keep leading you? Skye asked the crowd, illustrating how, without resistance, the measures have continued tightening. Skye, who has been one of those at the forefront of the freedom movement in Canada, told the crowd of the consequences he has faced for refusing to mask, refusing to be tested, and for holding rallies across the country encouraging people to do the same in an effort to put an end to these measures. I've been arrested over a dozen times. I've accumulated over $100,000 in fines and legal fees close to that. I'm currently on six separate bails, each one of them with their own conditions, including things like not being able to drive, not being able to fly, having my house raided, and all my legally owned firearms taken.
He's almost like the UK's Tommy Robinson, isn't he, Lou?
He is,
yes. A man of courage and endurance through this kind of a tyrannical threat.
That's exactly right. He goes on to say, why are they doing this to me? Because they want to make an example of people who stand up. But all they're doing is proving that, really, they can't do anything. They haven't stopped me from speaking. They haven't stopped me from spreading the word, he added. In response, the crowd started chanting, just say no, which was a phrase Sky developed at the beginning of the COVID-19 measures to encourage Canadians to resist the measures from becoming the, quote, new normal, unquote. It works, and that's all we have to do, Sky shouted in response to hearing his chant. Also in attendance was constitutional rights attorney Rocco Galati, who is currently suing the federal government, the British Columbia provincial government, as well as Trudeau and government public health officials over the imposition of these illegal COVID-19 measures. Exclaimed Galati, it's a very simple fight. It's about who controls your body, your mind, and your will. You or the friggin' state. Thomas Jefferson said that when people are afraid of the government, you have a tyranny. And when government is afraid of the people, you have a democracy. And what we've got right now is a dictatorship, he said. Referring to the Genetic Non-Discrimination Act, Galati reminded the crowd that under Canadian federal law, forcing someone to take a PCR test or any other COVID-19 test is a criminal offense, punishable by 5 years in prison. Said Galati, there is no magic wand. The only thing that's going to get us out of this tyranny is if every individual ensures their liberties. He continued, you can't sit at home and expect somebody else to do it for you. Everybody's got to do it for themselves. Quoting Bruce Springsteen, Galati concluded his address to the crowd, no retreat, no surrender. Elizabeth, are there more signs of hope?
Yes, Lou. No retreat, no surrender. Military members sue Defense Department over COVID-19 vaccine mandate because they have already natural immunity. And this was Natural News, September 3rd by J.D. Hayes. We have a few excerpts. According to the Children's Defense Fund, the two members have filed legal action on behalf of themselves and the other 220,000 personnel who also have had the illness and now have natural immunity, a suit that comes on the heels of new research proving that natural immunity works best to fend off even the Delta variant better than any of the three approved vaccines. Quote, the lead plaintiffs in the lawsuit, Staff Sergeant Daniel Robert and Staff Sergeant Hallie Mulvihill, allege U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin ignored the DOD's own regulations and created an entirely new definition of, quote, full immunity as being achievable only by vaccination, the organization reports in a press release. According to the lawsuit, the military's existing laws and regulations unequivocally provide the exemption the plaintiffs seek under Army Regulation 40-562, AR-40-562, which provides documented survivors of an infection a presumptive medical exemption from vaccination because of the natural immunity acquired as a result of having survived the infection. The release continues. And now this is Elizabeth speaking. There is more late-breaking news about the harm of the COVID vaccines. And we discussed on a prior program about the tractor truck spill on Route 79 outside of Morgantown, West Virginia, and how the hazmat group had to come. And finally, it was co-opted by members of the DOD, the Department of Defense. So we can see that if the hazmat group was there, this is not an innocuous kind of substance with these 1,000 vaccines spilling out over the road. And now we have late news of a Malaysian pilot and he was about to take off. It may have been from Malaysian Airlines. At any rate, there were about 120-plus passengers, and they were getting ready for the takeoff. But he slumped over, and something drastically happened to him. He went into a coma. So the co-pilot took over, but the pilot later died. What's this going to mean for all the people in the air here flying in America? But we do salute, isn't it, American Airlines, Lou, that is not mandating their employees to get the vaccines?
I think that's right, yes.
I think so, too. So now, the New World Order, all-seeing eye, is developing a crack in its plasticized fake stone surface. Unlike God's eye, this eye of evil is not a living organ, only even a counterfeit plastic stone. It's not even real stone. So now Intercept is reporting details that are really a breaking story that has a lot of power in it. It's coming now into the time that we are going to have a harsh scrutiny under daylight. Details of Dr. Anthony Fauci and NAID and his direct role in the financing of the COVID bioweapon research in Wuhan. Just as the horrid details are out now of Fauci, University of Pittsburgh, living aborted babies' organs being ripped out, baby scalps being attached to rats' scalps, and these were Fauci ideas. Lou read them to you. He read that expose. Abominations to God can no longer be covered up by darkness.
Some longtime medical associates, instrumental in the decades of development of children's vaccines, apparently were able to ignore the huge increases in child autism. Yet they cannot go so far as to condone the coming COVID booster shots that increasing numbers of medical experts say will further destroy the inoculated person's immune system, leading to huge numbers of people worldwide dying. From Natural News, we have this headline: Senior FDA leaders resign amid furor over COVID-19 booster shots, proving vaccine decisions are all about politics, not science. This is by J.D. Hayes, September 2nd, 2021. The Biden regime and the deep state left continue to push for all Americans to get the COVID-19 vaccine, despite the fact that they are of suspect effectiveness, given that people who have gotten the jab are still coming down with the disease. In recent days, the man who's been most wrong about the coronavirus and who reportedly helped fund its development, Dr. Tony Fauci, and doctor is in quotation marks there, Dr. Tony Fauci said he's certain, and that's in quotation marks, that Americans are going to need booster vaccines. The White House chief medical advisor told NBC's Meet the Press, quote, "I'm certain we're going to need that third dose, looking at the data that we're seeing," unquote. And he went on to say at a later time on CNN, "I believe that mandating vaccines for children to appear in school is a good idea. We've done this for decades and decades, requiring polio, measles, mumps, rubella, hepatitis. So this would not be something new."
One change. Those were so-called approved vaccines. These are experimental usage vaccines. He didn't quite give us the full story there, did he?
He did not. And those are the more traditional vaccines. They're not the mRNA type.
That's right.
Obviously, not everyone agrees that the world's most incorrect man on COVID-19, and that could include a pair of formerly high-ranking officials at the Food and Drug Administration, the agency that is supposedly in charge of approving or disapproving booster vaccines. According to Endpoint News, two of the FDA's most senior vaccine leaders are exiting from their positions, raising fresh questions about the Biden administration and the way that it sidelined the FDA. Marion Gruber, director of the FDA's Office of Vaccines Research and Review, and 32-year veteran of the agency, will leave at the end of October. And OVRR Deputy Director Phil Krause, who has been at FDA for more than a decade, will leave in November. The news, first reported by BioCentury, is a massive blow to confidence in the agency's ability to regulate vaccines. The announcement, which is fairly earth-shattering, comes as the agency weighs whether or not to approve COVID boosters and shots for younger children. In addition, they leave as the Biden regime has announced that the booster shots may actually be ready, and that's in quotes, ready for rollout later this month, even though the FDA has yet to get its to give its approval.
This just shows us what we've heard about those early patents going back to 2001, 2002, and all the connections with Pierre Bright and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the CDC. This terrible, sinister plan has been not born yesterday, Lou. But
oh,
go
that's
ahead.
Just right. Yes, just right. So what does all of this really mean? Easy. Pushing COVID-19 vaccines and boosters is a purely political calculation and decision, not one based on science and research. That helps explain why the same people who were against the vaccines when Donald Trump was president are now for them, because they are in charge. Just another reason why you should really think about whether you want to get one at all. Next, Afghan Christians prevented from leaving, now in hiding. The Rahm Emanuel-style Afghan action engineering, a huge crisis in order to give U.S. weapons to the Taliban to eventually be used against us. And now another use has come out of the chaos, an avenue to target Christians. This was from Natural News by Arsenio Toledo, Friday, August 27th, 2021. And here we have a quote by Faith McDonald. I was told by contacts from various groups working to recuse those still in danger in Afghanistan, who must remain anonymous, that the State Department, at least at a certain point, was not implementing the lists that they required the organization to compile, even though they have sent them multiple times. McDonald was the director of advocacy at an Anglican nonprofit ministry group. Her organization is working to get Afghan Christians in danger of being oppressed by the Taliban out of Afghanistan. Christians and other religious minorities in Afghanistan are at extreme risk of being persecuted by the Islamic fundamentalist Taliban. Religious minorities of Afghanistan, like Christians, have not been given priority access to evacuate. Many organizations have called on the administration of President Joe Biden to broaden the groups it classifies as eligible for priority access to evacuation flights. Said McDonald, quote, "It seems at present as if no one is getting any priority unless they have some sort of special connection inside the airport." And conservative talk show host Glenn Beck has a nonprofit organization, the Nazarene Fund. It has raised more than $28 million to evacuate Christians from Afghanistan. The Nazarene Fund has also acquired 20 large aircraft that can airlift as many as 7,000 people. As of press time, his organization's flights have airlifted some 1,200 Afghan Christians out of the country. Charmaine Heading, president of the Israel-based nonprofit, the Shea Fund, is also focused on getting Afghan Christians out. Many of the people she is trying to help come from Muslim backgrounds and converted to Christianity later in their lives. She said one family she is trying to get out is actively being hunted by the Taliban. Quote, "They received a letter from the Taliban before they even closed down the whole of Kabul saying, we know who you are, we know where you are. So they've got them on a list and they're hunting them down. Remaining Christians in Afghanistan are now in hiding."
And there was a little bit more from LifeSite News, Friday, August 27, 2021, by Doug Mainswaring. Here's an excerpt. With the August 31st deadline, LifeSite News reported that with this August 31st deadline looming to get endangered people out of Afghanistan, conservative radio and TV commentator Glenn Beck quickly raised $30 million to charter planes to airlift Christians. And you heard Lou tell about this, who have all been pretty much abandoned to the Taliban, if not condemned to death by the Biden administration. Quote, "The State Department has blocked us every step of the way," Beck told Fox News in a Thursday night interview Quote, the State Department and the White House have been the biggest problem. Everyone else has been working together, putting aside differences and trying to get these people to safety. The State Department and the White House have blocked us every single step of the way, he reiterated. Converted Christians marked not just for death, but to be burned alive. Before yesterday's bombings of the Kabul airport, Beck's organization, the Nazarene Fund, had already put 5,100 refugees on planes out of Afghanistan. 500 refugees, mostly Christian women and children, were waiting to board the next plane inside the airport's safe zone when the bombings occurred. A military official ordered them to return to the other side of the gate, beyond the protected area of the airport. I have pictures of them pleading to get back through the gate, said Beck. I have pictures of blood and body parts and nothing but death in that same area. Our mission is now changing greatly, said Beck. We have to send people into even greater danger to try to smuggle these Christians out who are marked not just for death, but to be set on fire because they're converted Christians. Beck said that the State Department has also shut down his efforts to persuade other nations to receive the Afghani Christian refugees. In a recorded phone conversation with Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, shared via Twitter, Beck recounted how the State Department closed the door on the possibility of sending evacuees to Macedonia. I've heard reports that our State Department told Macedonia to stop taking Afghan refugees. Senator Tom Cotton tells me he's heard similar reports. That's from Glenn Beck, August 26th. We had been looking for places where we can fly people in just to hold them, and Macedonia was one of them, said Beck. The ambassador of Macedonia was called by the State Department and told not to take any of these people. What the hell? It was a follow-up, September 7th, Natural News headline. Biden regime blamed for delaying private groups try to evacuate U.S. citizens from Afghanistan. This is zero place to be, and I can't read my word, I think it's negotiating with American lives. Yes, it is. And so then we heard also about a man named Rick Clay, the head of Plan B, a private rescue organization, and he told Fox News that the State Department is all that is preventing flights he has set up from leaving the country. So we must move on here, that we must tell you that Zero Hedge then said that 100 Afghan evacuees were flown to the U.S. flag for terrorist ties. So NBC News reported on this, and supposedly these 100 had possible ties to the Taliban, and they were part of 30,000 evacuees from Afghanistan to the U.S., and that maybe 10,000 more were going to be screened. Now, we know what's happening. Radical Islam has been brought in before. Yes, they're deciding what to do with them. Does anyone believe that only the 100 token people who were vetted or checked that they're kind of bad? Oh, no. Oh, goody. Here comes more radical Islam and the deceptive Dawah plan that they always have, pretending to assimilate in the U.S. while getting ready to conquer. They're coming soon to your neighborhood and mine. And we have to now check whether we can do our last article before we move on to something. I think it's important that we do, because Australia is not a place of hope, and we want to remain sturdy here. All of you listeners need to be praying, thanking God for some of these brave people who are outing some of this. And we need to be praying that God will be merciful to us and let us have more time to repent. Lou, let's go to this article.
Door-to-door medical kidnappings begin in Australia as COVID fascism escalates. Ethan Huff, September 2nd, 2021. An Australian man, clearly in good health, was abducted from his home by Wuhan coronavirus first responders and taken away to a quarantine camp after testing positive for the Chinese virus.
And we must interject, even the CDC now has admitted that the PCR tests were not done accurately, and they're not valid. Go
That's
ahead.
That's right.
It's an excuse to abduct someone into tyranny.
Exactly. The man is obviously not sick, and it looks like he works out at a gym for several hours a day. You can watch a video of him below. Even so, he was hauled off in a paddy wagon-type vehicle by masked and caped medical workers who ushered him off his property in compliance with Australia's new pandemic requirements.
This ain't Batman.
It's not. Quote, confused but happy to comply, he heads off for an indefinite stay at quarantine camp. The newscaster in the above video is heard stating, like something out of a dystopian science fiction film. As it turns out, Australian police are now going door-to-door, abducting anyone whom the government finds out tested positive for the Fauci flu.
With some kind of zany travel music. Can't you picture this?
Oh, yes.
It's a horror movie is what it is.
Yeah. And they'll pick them up even if they are not actually sick.
That's right.
Citizen Free Press reports that police, and this is in quotes, police will remove you from your home if you tested positive for COVID, unquote. Is COVID ushering in a Fourth Reich? Australia is busily building new camp compounds for Wuhan flu patients to live indefinitely until the government decides that it is, quote-unquote, safe for them to rejoin society. If and when that happens, residents of these camps will be held there against their will, almost like a prison or a concentration camp. They are not allowed to leave or see visitors and must remain confined inside the compound until the government says otherwise.
Is this the new normal that was warned about all last year? Are people now being hauled off to, quote, quarantine concentration camps for, quote, cleansing, just like the Jews were during World War II? This time around, the goal seems to be to purge the, quote, virus of freedom and liberty from the world and replace it with global tyranny and willing obedience to the government. Anyone who resists that agenda will likely test, quote, positive and be hauled off to a COVID re-education facility to be washed clean of their resistance to the new world order. It might sound crazy, but this is what is manifesting before our very eyes, starting with Australia. Eventually, the madness will spread elsewhere until every last nation on earth is purged of COVID, a.k.a. free-thinking humans. Never mind that Australia, a nation of 26 million, has only experienced a total of 1,000 deaths over the 19 months of this charade, one commenter at Citizen Free Press noted. Instead, just know that it's for his health that this obviously fit man is taken away by a dangerously overweight government worker in protective costume. If this makes sense to you, get tested for a mental disease. Others drew comparisons to Nazi Germany and the idea of just get in the boxcar. It is for your own good, the Australian government is telling its captives, just like those hauled away to concentration camps were told right before being exterminated. Confused but happy to comply? Just like cows at a meat processing plant might be confused but happy to comply as they line up to be slaughtered, perhaps? Wrote another, comparing the man in the video to a head of cattle that does not have a clue what is coming next. There was a little hope, a follow-up September 7th, a Natural News headline about Australian first responders. These were ambulance workers in Victoria, and 4.3% of them declined to get the COVID vaccines. But we have to realize about 67% of the total ambulance staff has already received two doses of the vaccine. And now we move on to the second part of our program. These warnings have been there before now, haven't they, Lou?
That they have, yes. Will more than 4.3% wake up, not only among Victoria ambulance workers, but worldwide, to the present COVID vaccine dangers? It's instructive to hear military man Al Cuppett's warning about 9/11 and Christians and patriots that they need to remain vigilant. And now we present 9/11, 20-Year Chronicles, Part 2, forward to Elizabeth Cuppett Cavely's book, Patriots Warning 1, America Attacked, written in 2004. The September morning calm and my extended rest were broken by the incessant ringing of the telephone. I had just gotten in from Honolulu the day before, where I had spoken to a group about the New World Order and the danger it presents to our American way of life. I was sound asleep when the phone rang. I answered the call and heard Mike shouting, "Get your TV on, quick!" Half asleep, but with over 30 years of military training driving me, I obediently rushed into the guest bedroom and out of the closet dragged an old black and white TV, dusted it off, plugged it in, and turned it on. There, as I adjusted the antenna in front of my sleeping eyes, was a tall, smoking building in Manhattan. That looks rather familiar, I thought. Did it ever look familiar? It was the same tall building I had featured on the Prophecy Club video, Black Operations and Prophecy, which was filmed on July 15, 1998, in South Bend, Indiana, more than 3 years before September 11, 2001. The picture I had inserted into the video was that of the World Trade Center complex, namely, with a rifle scope's crosshairs pinpointed on the exact impact point of the first jetliner on the Doom Tower. That picture was the official Department of Justice FEMA Emergency Response to Terrorism overhead projector slide, which had been given to me by a fireman in West Palm Beach in May 1998. The New World Order had struck again. Yes, the New World Order, which flaunts the motto, Ordo Ab Chao, that is, order out of chaos, had struck once again, just as President G.H.W. Bush had promised us, exactly 11 years earlier, on September 11, 1990. As I recall, he was in Kuwait addressing Operation Desert Shield, military forces preparing to attack Iraq in what would be Operation Desert Storm. Furthermore, exactly 1 year later, again on 11th September 1991, he made the exact same statement before Congress. George H.W. Bush had promised to deliver the New World Order to American shores, and he and his worldwide Illuminist friends had delivered. The Prophecy Club video proves it. My relative Elizabeth has written a unique book, masterfully weaving critical investigative journalism cleverly into a tapestry of facts and history. Facts, which you, dear reader, need to know and learn about and learn now. For if you and millions of other Americans do not digest these facts, our history as a democratic republic is to be short-lived. You must chew the meat quickly. To wit, from 1982, I recall a sign on the wall of Major General Jerry Prather's AFXOK Air Staff Office in the Pentagon. The sign read, "What you don't know won't hurt you. It'll kill you." It's with that sign in mind that I typed the foreword to a book which will open your eyes to the imminent and pernicious threat we are all now facing. If divine providence, the Lord himself, is gracious, as well as more than merciful, we will have time to publish this book. In the event we don't get the book published before catastrophe strikes, we can still hold our heads high and say, we have fulfilled our duty as watchmen. But when we saw the sword approaching, we sounded the alarm, trying to awaken a sleeping republic. I add the following that you might grasp where I have gained the experience to write a foreword to what you read herein. At the close of my 31 years service to the United States, I served for 6 years as an action officer in the position of a command and control and intelligence communications evaluator and inspector with the Joint Chiefs of Staff. My subsequent investigation of the United Nations and the deadly New World Order since my retirement in 1990 proves that what you read in this book is accurate and up to date. Dear reader, I would beg of you to review what's contained within these pages with all diligence. For neither I nor Elizabeth Carverly want you to suffer what the New World Order has planned for you, your children, and even your grandchildren. Rather, we would have the reader deliver his soul from the sword. Ezekiel 33, 1-9, authorized King James Version of the Holy Bible. With warm but solemn regards, in his glad service, Alexander L. Cuppert.
And I would just interject that God has been so merciful to give us 20 more years since the time of that terrible shock to America. And now continuing from my book, Two American authors, 9/11 foreshadowing. 1. Binoculars into America's future. In the Martian Chronicles, author Ray Bradbury's opening chapter is only one page long, entitled Rocket Summer. It completely captures the breathtaking feeling of suspense, hope, and unlimited potential, a future just waiting for men of creativity and sanity to mold it. Quote, one minute it was Ohio winter with doors closed, windows locked, the panes blind with frost, icicles fringing every roof, children skiing on slopes. And then a long wave of warmth crossed the small town, as if someone had left a bakery door open. Rocket summer! The rocket lay on the launching field in a cold winter morning, making summer with every breath of its mighty exhaust, and summer lay for a brief moment upon the land. What was happening September 11, 2001, in Bradbury's forward-looking novel? The closest date to it that the writer uses in the chapter, entitled August 2001, is called The Settlers. Quotes from this chapter again reveal the pioneering, hopeful spirit moving man's greatest adventure forward, showing the mindset of American patriotism, a deep, poignant love in each traveler for the particular state left behind. The men on Earth came to Mars. There was a reason for each man. They were coming with small dreams or large dreams or none at all. But a government finger pointed from four color posters in many towns. There's work for you in the sky. See Mars. Most men felt the illness called the loneliness, because when you saw your hometown dwindle to the size of your fist, and then lemon size, and then pin size, and vanish in the fire wake, you felt you had never been born. There was no town. You were nowhere. It was space all around. And when the state of Illinois, Iowa, Missouri, or Montana vanished into cloud seas, and doubly when the United States shrank to a misty island, then you were alone, on your way to a place you couldn't imagine. The youthful Ray Bradbury in 1946 could never have imagined that the United States could shrink into a different kind of mist in the future he looked into, a heavy, black, miasmic, deadly air, the horrible event that made Margaret's son pick up the telephone and relay to her those words, "Our nation is in dire peril. Not expansion or progress or creativity, man's highest hopes and accomplishments, but tragedy, shock, limitation, and loss of 3,000-plus innocent lives." Another American writer, Stephen Vincent Benet, back in 1937, had a vision, too, of the future of New York City in his indelible short story, By the Waters of Babylon. Benet was an author who was frequently taught to high school students in the 1950s. He was the author of John Brown's Body, which received the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry in 1929, and of the classic short story The Devil and Daniel Webster. Interestingly, Benet was born in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, 1893 to 1943, the years of his life, the son, grandson, and great-grandson of Army officers. In these multicultural times, Stephen Vincent Benet is probably omitted from books and denied recognition because he is too patriotic and too American. The vision of the future in his By the Waters of Babylon is the sheer opposite of Bradbury's optimistic scenario of science's golden space future. The key character, John, son of John, and a member of the people called the Hill People, tries to recapture meaning from the artifacts left from another race of men. We are not ignorant like the forest people. Our women spin wool on the wheel. Our priests wear a white robe. We do not eat grubs from the tree. We have not forgotten the old writings, although they are hard to understand. John, living by tribal portent and custom, sees the wished-for sign, an eagle. More signs follow. Three deer pass. A white fawn is with them. A panther almost kills the fawn. John destroys the panther first and then knows his destiny is to visit the forbidden place of the gods. In 1937, years before the emergence of the first atomic bomb, Benet's protagonist says presciently, "It felt like ground underfoot. It did not burn me. It is not true what some of the tales say, that the ground there burns forever, for I have been there. Here and there were the marks and stains of the great burning on the ruins. Everywhere there are the ruins of the high towers of the gods. There was also the shattered image of a man or a god. It had been made of white stone, and he wore his hair tied back like a woman's. His name was Ashing, and we put in brackets there, Washington. As I read on the cracked half of a stone, I thought it wise to pray to Ashing, though I do not know that god. John eventually sees all the wonders of the vanished civilization, magnificent pictures and furnishings inside homes and outside, great roads, buildings, and bridges. He speculates on these, quote, gods. Were they happy? What is happiness to the gods? They were great. They were mighty. They were wonderful and terrible. A little more, it seemed to me, and they would pull down the moon from the sky. I saw them with wisdom, and knowledge beyond knowledge. And yet not all they did was well done. Then I saw their fate come upon them, and that was terrible past speech. It was fire falling out of the sky and a mist that poisoned. It was a time of the great burning and the destruction. They ran about like ants in the streets of their city. Poor gods, poor gods. Then the towers began to fall. I saw the last of them die. It was darkness over the broken city. And I wept. Benet makes it clear that the destroyed city was indeed New York, perhaps eviscerated by a force that could still come, one much more terrible even than the awful events of September 11th. Bradbury's vision assumed that men of sanity and with love of country will win out, while Benet's dark glimpse unveils total annihilation brought about by political and technological depravity, lies, greed, and no caring that the American individual is worth all. Two roads in a wood diverge, said American poet Robert Frost. Perhaps the way our country chooses to take, the path of exhilaration depicted in Bradbury's Rocket Summer, or the Benet Road, ultimate sorrow and destruction, depends first upon giving the people knowledge, waking them to new vigilance, shining the light upon despicable things hidden and thus protected from them in darkness for too long. And I interject, Elizabeth Cuppet Caverly, that I hope you will pray for the provision and protection of our website and our program. DividedKingdomRadio.com is where you can tell your friends and others to hear our archives, this program and earlier important programs beginning in July 2021 till the present. You can hear it, DividedKingdomRadio.com. And if you would like to help us with a little cash, postage stamps, or a check or money order, a check can only be made out to either Global Star Communications or WWCR. You can send it to Lou Caverly, capital C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Only you and Lou and I are keeping this program going. So we thank you, very many of you who have helped us lately. Now back to my book, Patriots Warning 1, America Attacked. We are now moving to the wonderful Blitzkrieg one-day research that Lou Caverly did one day in June 2002. That was an interesting day. Sometime we might tell you more about it, but it was amazing how God helped him get all this. Take it, Lou.
Number two, Ship of State Soundbites. A, Perpetrators and Failed Protectors. In Egypt, a columnist for the country's leading pro-government newspaper offered a strangely popular theory about the World Trade Center attacks. He wrote, "The perpetrators are Americans." That was from U.S. News and World Report, October 8, 2001. The day after the attacks, the New York Fire Department chief arson investigator told television reporters, "Internal explosives," and those were his very words, "internal explosives were used to bring down the World Trade Center towers." That was from a book by Will Thomas, All Fall Down. In New York, several blocks from the ruins of the World Trade Center, a passport, authorities said a passport authorities said belonged to one of the hijackers was discovered a few days ago, according to City Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick. That has prompted the FBI and the police to widen the search area. And that was from CNN on, I believe, September 16th, 2001. We are asked to believe that one of the hijackers brought his passport with him on a domestic flight, even though he knew he would not need it then or ever again. That upon impact, the passport flew out of the aircraft, that it flew out of the burning tower, and that it was carried by the air currents and landed safely, where it could be discovered several blocks away. That's by Carol A. Valentine at ZillaTimes.com. It's a kind of a needle in a haystack proposition, said Howard Ledbetter, the FBI agent heading WTC, Evidence Recovery. Ledbetter says he's inspired by the passport belonging to a hijacker recovered on September 11th. It was a $1 in a billion find. By Julie Scalfo, it's a kind of a needle in a haystack proposition. Newsweek, January 2002. It appears that by 9:10, controllers had a track in Flight 77, now over West Virginia, heading back toward Washington. By that time, the first two planes had hit the World Trade Center, the second at 9:03. Still, the FBA did not notify NORAD, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, above Flight 77 until 9:24. Again, from U.S. News and World Report, October 8, 2001, page 26. The FAA had notified NORAD about the two Boston flights more than 40 minutes earlier. By 9:30, two F-16 fighters from Langley Air Force Base in Virginia, 120 miles away, were airborne. But the airliner hit the Pentagon at 9:37. The two fighters were still 12 minutes away.
And look at that last sentence again. Tell us that again.
Yes. The two fighters were still 12 minutes away.
And that really tells us something, doesn't it?
Yes.
It really allowed to happen. Go ahead, Lou.
That was from U.S. News and World Report, October 8th, page 2001, page 26. Air defense around Washington is provided mainly by fighter planes from Andrews Air Force Base in Maryland, near the District of Columbia border. The D.C. Air National Guard is also based there and equipped with F-16 fighter planes, a National Guard spokesman said. And this is in quotes, but the fighters took to the skies over Washington only after the devastating attack on the Pentagon, unquote. From the San Diego Union Tribune, September 12, 2001. All commercial airliners must adhere to regulation, rigid instrument flight rules. They must hit assigned aerial intersections within minutes of their ETA. That's their estimated time of arrival. If their altitude bobbles, if course changes a few degrees, if they are late reporting, inquiries from air traffic control are immediate and insistent. They have to be. At jet speeds, collision comes in an eye blink. Now we are told that an airliner departs its assigned course and altitude and cruises toward New York for 48 minutes with no one at the scope noticing. By Will Thomas, All Fall Down. And now here's my 2021 update. 20 years have passed since the events of November 11th, 2001.
Lou, look at that again. You've been under a lot of pressure today, rushing here and there. Take your time. And I don't like to say this, but Lou has a little problem, like some kids we tutored. His eyes don't always track carefully together. So if you notice something, sometimes he'll have to have a little stammer or say it again, but it wasn't November 11th. It was September 11th.
Oh, you're right. September
11th. And this is your wonderful essay. Go ahead.
Yes, 20 years have passed since the events of September 11th, 2001. Yet the same pattern of intentional incompetence by the U.S. government seems to be present in the U.S.-Afghanistan situation. Prior to the 9/11 attacks, critical warnings were ignored, or were still suppressed. On the day of 9/11, standard operating procedures were not followed. Jet interceptors were not quickly scrambled, and they flew at speeds far below their capacity. Thus, they did not arrive in time to foil the attacks on the South Tower of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. In the days after the attacks, debris from the Twin Towers was quickly removed and shipped overseas for scrap. Consequently, no chemical test could be performed to check for the cause of their collapse. Several members of the bin Laden family were speedily flown out of the country before they could be questioned about any knowledge they might have had about the attacks. Was all of this just incompetence, or were there more devious motives? Now, in early September 2021, we have just witnessed more intentional, and I have that word in quotes, intentional failures. No one can look at the withdrawal from Afghanistan without cringing. The president announced the withdrawal date weeks ahead of time, a great favor to the Taliban. A strategic Air Force base was abandoned overnight without notifying our allies in advance. Millions, perhaps billions, of dollars of military equipment was left behind in the rush to leave. And defying all logic, the names of Americans and Afghan allies of the U.S. were handed over to the Taliban. Once again, this was a great favor to the Taliban. It made it that much easier for them to seek out and eliminate anyone who had assisted the American forces or their allies. It stretches credulity to believe that all these acts were merely due to stupidity. Something else is going on. And what about the immigration crisis? After dismantling President Trump's border policies, the Biden administration has done almost nothing to relieve the vast influx of immigrants. Human trafficking abounds. COVID-stricken people flood in constantly, and the federal government does nothing. The State Department has prohibited U.S. rescue attempts of Afghan Christians and even told Macedonia not to give these Christians a safe haven. Talk show host Glenn Beck has been able to rescue 5,000 people with his airplanes. Should we salute President Beck for statesmanship instead of bungling Biden? A number of Afghani refugees are being settled in Oklahoma, according to reports of people there. No, not bungling after all. The U.S. government is bringing in lots of unvetted immigrants, no doubt including many radical Islamists. Are they just waiting for the chance to strike? NWO mercenaries to be used in the latter stages of America's takedown? Similar bungling, or is it diabolical planning again, applies to the COVID-19 situation. The vaccines were rushed and given quick approval without adequate testing. Treatments that did not enrich Big Pharma were squashed, even though they were reported to be effective in other countries. Leading medical personnel, such as Dr. Lee Merritt and Dr. Michael Yaden, posed the possibility of a planned population reduction, a world genocide against humanity. We see the disastrous results occurring from the clot shots, including worldwide burgeoning injury and death rates. Four British Air pilots dead in 1 week after receiving the vaccines. From February 1st to August 3rd, 2021, United Kingdom records of Delta variant show 742 deaths, of which 402 were fully vaccinated and 79 had received just one shot. The remaining 253 cases, about a third, were the unvaccinated. The much-vaunted vaccines are not doing their job. Or are they doing it all too well? Clearly, quasi-President Biden and his government in 2021 follow lockstep in the footsteps of 2001. The actions of those in power continue to lead the nation into traps that result in catastrophe. It is no longer possible to look at all these accumulated disasters and just write them off as honest mistakes. The plan to bring down the nation is still moving rapidly forward.
You hit the nail on the head, Lou. A very powerful look at what's going on. And now let's move back to just a few more of your sound bites there from your research that went into my book.
Why does the heavy drinking and searching for hookers by some of the hijackers in Boston, as reported by Reuters News Service, sound more like mercenaries carousing before a mission than pious religious fundamentalists about to meet their maker? That was by Jim Myers from an overview of the War on Terrorism. Military people wear uniform garments even in combat, and this is an element in ceremony. Why did they do that? Some troops in Vietnam began to dress like bandits when discipline eroded. Oliver North's first company commander wore a red bandana and allowed himself to be called organ grinder by his troops. Meanwhile, North and other platoon leaders grew long hair and mustaches. But there is a moral aspect to this as well. If you carry guns and dress the part of a bandit, you may find it easy to play the part of a bandit as well. That's from Paul Woodruff, his book, Reverence, Renewing a Forgotten Virtue. In a calm, reportorial manner, Sweeney, and this is the flight attendant on one of the airlines, Sweeney told Woodward, American Airlines flight service manager back at Logan Airport in Boston, that four Middle Eastern men, some wearing red bandanas and brandishing box cutters, had sprung out of their class seats and slit the throat of another passenger. Then they stormed the cockpit. From Andrew Kurtzman, Minute by Minute with Rudy on 9/11.
And we stop there a minute to just suggest that sometimes we have secret societies with secret symbols. We remember how you saw that the CDC entrance gate looked like a tombstone. Then
yes.
We found out that the founder of the CDC went to the Jesuit Research University, Marquette University. And he got his degree in 1914 and then another degree, I think, in 1916. So we have a lot of hands at the top who worship a different god. We saw from the Masonic Bible that your brother sent us after your father's death. Your father was duped into being a porch mason. He didn't understand any of this at the top of the 33rd degree Mason worship of things. But right there in that Bible, I found the description that they worshiped Lucifer. So we have these red bandanas. We're not entirely sure what they go to, but they go to something. Now, next week, we are going to again have the hard-hitting news that you look forward to and get your prayers for us. And we again will go back into some of these important sound bites, some of the most important about the body parts and the things being thrown or propelled 6 miles from the Flight 93 crash site to Indian Lake. Now, that does not sound like just a plane crash, does it, listeners? So, again, if you appreciate this program and you want to help us, please send what you can to Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. You don't have to suffer through commercials. And you know that the two of us are sincere Christians. He will have mercy and help you, just as he helped us. In the last week, for over a year, we dreaded trying to get 2 dental crowns put back into our mouth because of COVID. And God led us to a wonderful elderly Christian dentist. He took care of us, and we're fine. He will help you, too. Keep your faith and stand up for the truth. Good night.